It's time to get spooky. Welcome to the show. Let's go.
Hello, and welcome back to the Spooky Scary Podcast. My name is Kath.
And my name is Chris. And you are you.
You.
Congratulations for that.
Good job. So what are we talking about today? Just like generic. I mean, not generic. I'm not going to describe our podcast as generic. Look at me selling it.
We're very generic. Like, take all of the really good things, like the name brand, and then discount it a lot.
Hello, new listeners. It's us, the Generic Podcast.
New name. New sound. Same
just
idiots.
Generic. Yeah. What I was trying to say by generic was that we don't have, like, a theme.
Yeah, we're just doing, like, true crime and paranormal. We're living up to both sides of our name.
Mine is kind of paranormal, but also just kind of sad.
Oh, good. That's really fun, because mine is... Oh, mine is fucked.
Have you seen the show Ratched on Netflix?
I didn't finish it. Yes.
But mine is semi-related to that.
Oh, cute. I've tried watching it, but, like, here recently, I've just really needed shows that I could put on and not pay attention to.
Same. I think, like, I liked what I saw. I think I just need to, like, be in a place where I can focus, you know?
Right, exactly. And most right days, now, I'm like, I need the most mind-numbing of shit to put in my brain right now.
My brain feels like, just fried all the time, so I'm like, can I have, like, a TV show I've seen 600 times already, please? Like, The Office?
My new show that I'm watching, and it is the dumbest possible show that I think I have seen probably ever. And that's saying a lot, because I've watched a lot of dumb shit. And you have to be extremely high to be able to watch this. Like, otherwise it is unbearable. But it's called Auntie Donna's Big Ol' House of Fun.
What is that?
It's like a skit comedy show. But just, it truly is mind-numbing. Like, it melts your brain.
But in a good way?
Yeah, like, it's in a way of, like, Jesus Christ, this is so stupid that, it, like, I can just stare at this and not absorb a single ounce of what is happening on this television, and I will have not have missed a single thing.
Where do you find it?
It is on Netflix.
Interesting.
Ed Helms is the executive producer.
I love Ed Helms.
Yeah, so, like,
so it's a move.
Yeah, it's good. It, like I said, you just have to be extremely high for it, or else it hurts. Which, like, that's how you know it's good TV.
You Are we redacting that from the podcast?
I don't know. We'll decide in post. We don't give our last names out on here.
Would you like to begin?
Yeah.
Do you want me to start or you to start?
Because
last time we just kind of all talked.
I think in our last, like, story podcast, I think you went first.
I have no idea, because it was actually in March.
I know. I listened to it, like, last week, because I was bored and ran out of all of my other podcasts, and you did The Zodiac Killer.
Ah, yes.
So, you went
I'm ready
first
for
that
some
week.
True crime. Let's go.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not ready for it in my life,
right.
But...
I'm not ready for it in my life. So I really wanted to do something Illinois related, because one of my coworkers was talking to me about it after I was like, oh my God, I had genuinely no idea what to do for this episode. Then she started listing off a bunch of, like, cold cases and stuff that have happened, like, within 20 miles of where I live. And I was like, shit, that's fun. And so I started researching a bunch of those, and I found some that I might do for later episodes. But to be quite honest, the research was becoming very extensive, and I got lazy.
I feel that.
So I went with another very well-known Illinois serial killer.
Okay.
I'm going to do John Wayne Gacy.
Ooh, I actually... Like, I know the basics of it, but I don't know, like, the whole story.
I had to, like, go back and look at our drive to see if we had done this before, because mm-hmm. all of the links were already highlighted on my computer when I started doing research, and I was like, oh my god, I've already done this? But
so now I know that you haven't already done it, but you have just researched John Wayne Gacy in your spare time for no reason.
I mean, I'd like to think it was originally an idea I was going to do for the podcast at one point and then changed my mind. However, knowing me, there's a very good chance I was just researching John Wayne Gacy.
So he's the clown man, right?
He is the clown man, yes.
And he's a pedophile?
Unfortunately.
That's all I know. So...
The clown man pedophile. That's it. Yes. That's the whole story, actually.
Okay, well, it's been a good podcast. See you guys.
See you next week. Okay. So, John Wayne Gacy was born on March 17th, 1974. He had a shitty relationship with his dad, who was an alcoholic, who abused him and called him a sissy. So that's, you know, super nice. This is not at all, like, excusing
his actions, obviously, by the way. But this I feel like...
giving a backstory to who he is. People can have shitty childhoods. Doesn't mean they murder people.
But I feel like it's also important to talk about, like, things that cause...
Right. Right, exactly.
These kind of things. Because obviously there are so many people who were abused by their parents who turned out to be lovely, amazing people. But there also can be side effects to abuse.
Right, exactly.
Like, a small percentage of people might... get, and those things should still be talked about.
Exactly. So that's what I'm doing. Gacy was described as deeply loving his father and wanting desperately to gain his approval and attention, but was unable to win him over. But he was close to his sisters and his mother, so he kind of had, like, just the one shitty person in his life, but at least his mom and sisters were chill.
Nicer, yeah. I wasn't really paying attention, but I think the only reason I know even just clown pedophile about John Wayne Gacy, those are the two adjectives, or nouns? Nouns.
Nouns.
I'm an English teacher. The only reason I know those things is because my boyfriend, for the listeners, Alex, was watching, like, a documentary about John Wayne Gacy, and I was not paying attention, but I remember they were interviewing his sister.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, we all thought he was nice. I don't know.
I mean, he was nice to us. Oh, shit.
Direct quote from the interview.
Surprise, I was actually the one doing the interviewing.
You did a great job.
Thanks. I'm very good at making myself a woman. I don't know if the interviewer was a woman. I just assumed it was. I have not seen that documentary. Actually, no, I think I have. I think I've seen
it. It's on YouTube, I think.
Cute.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm still sick.
Do you have COVID or were
no,
we
I'm
waiting
COVID,
to find
I'm
out?
COVID negative, but my boss made a big deal and was like, well, you were exposed to someone at work, so even if
Stevie might be,
well, he just has a fever, COVID. But he's probably not COVID, he just has a fever.
I feel like if you were negative, he's probably negative.
Right, exactly. But she was like, well, if you test negative but you're still having the symptoms, then it could be a false negative, or you hadn't got, like, it hadn't developed enough yet, so you just need to make sure you stay home until you don't have symptoms. But then the boss of my clinic was like, you can come in on Monday.
Well,
and I was like, I mean, okay. I mean, I'm getting paid either way because they gave me paid leave.
Mm-hmm. But people really are not taking this thing seriously.
No, they're not. Because, like, I mean, most of our sites are down a lot of people because of COVID, because they're testing positive.
Mm-hmm. I have a friend who literally right now has a fever and a cough and, like, is sick with COVID symptoms. And they're... coworker came into work, like, a couple days ago, very sick with COVID symptoms. But my friend right now is like, well, I can't get tested because if I get tested and it's positive, then I can't go to work. And I'm not, like, going to get paid to stay home, and I can't just not be at work for 2 weeks because I will not have any money. So I just am going to go.
And hope for the best.
And hope that it's just a cold.
Right, exactly. And I'm like, it's
yikes.
I mean, that's mm-hmm. literally what I had to do up until like this month. All of my yeah. other jobs that I've had during the pandemic have been so shitty about the pandemic. Like, one job forced like a good majority of our center to quarantine for 2 weeks,
mm-hmm.
told us we were going to get paid for it, just for us all to get denial letters from the company, basically.
That's so fucked up.
And so we were like, cool, thanks. No money for us. That's nice.
Yeah. You guys thought we were going to talk about John Wayne Gacy. We're going to talk about a worse horror.
Unemployment.
Capitalism.
Oh, that too.
They go hand in yeah. hand.
Anyway,
back to the clown man.
When he was 11, he was struck on the forehead by a swing, which resulted in a blood clot to form in his brain that went unnoticed for 5 years until he was 16, when he began to suffer from blackouts. He was just given a medication that helped dissolve the clots, and supposedly it just went away. So, man just had a whole ass blood clot in his head for 5 years. So that's really fun. he attended 4 different high schools throughout his senior year and never graduated. Mm-hmm. So he dropped out of high school, left Chicago for Las Vegas. He ran out of money in Las Vegas. He then worked long enough to be able to earn money to go back home to Chicago. He was living with his mom for a little while. And somehow, without returning to high school, he enrolled in Northwestern Business College and eventually graduated with a degree in business. So I guess in the 70s, you didn't need a high school education to do things.
I was going to be like, good for him. And then I was like, no.
He's a bad man.
Let's not give him any congratulations.
After graduating, he went on to work as a management trainee at Nunn Bush Shoe Co. in downtown Chicago.
Like, they make shoes?
I guess so. He was doing really well in that position and within a few weeks was transferred to Springfield to manage a men's clothing outlet for the company, where he worked for about a year.
Oh.
Shortly after being promoted, he married into a wealthy family and relocated with his new wife to Waterloo, Iowa.
Imagine being married to John Wayne Gacy.
God, I know. Fucking terrifying. He settled there, had 2 children, a son and a daughter, and he worked at a KFC franchise. So.
As like.
A manager, I'm assuming.
I guess, yeah.
Well, it says. I was like. I wrote his KFC franchise. So
oh,
I guess it was.
Oh,
like,
okay. So he might have had one. Opened his own yeah. KFC.
Hold on, sorry. 1 second.
This episode's going to be rough to edit.
I know. I'm so sorry. My phone was acting fucky, so I had to fix it because it kept like trying to disconnect my FaceTime. Sorry.
KFC.
Yes. I wrote something down and I'm trying to figure out what it is because I gave myself no clues.
What does it say, like verbatim?
It just says joining the Jaycees, and I'm like, I don't know what that is. I meant to Google it. I wrote it there with like a little thing next to it to Google it and just never did. So we're gonna just skate past my poor planning.
That's some homework for the listener. Google joining the Jaycees or the Jaycees.
That's what, like, I thought at first. I was like, is that just a fun way of spelling Gacy? Did he make his own club? But probably not. So
that's his version of Keeping Up with the Kardashians. He was like, I'll have a reality TV show. Yeah,
exactly. So rumors of him being gay began to spread, but that did not stop him from being named outstanding vice president of the Jaycees. So whatever they are, it's an organization that he became vice president in, apparently.
Okay, so it's probably like a store or something.
Oh, maybe.
Are we sure it's not Macy's?
No, it's spelt very distinctive.
And this will just be a fun mystery.
Yeah. I'm really bad at this, apparently. I thought I did really well on these notes. I forgot to go back and look in and look at them after I finished typing
Do
them.
We know what, what time period is this? Like, the 70s?
This is... Hold on. I feel like I typed something wrong. Because it says that he was born in 74, but then it's mentioning mm-hmm. him being elected something in 67. So...
He was born in 42.
What the fuck? How did I type 74? What the hell? Okay. So, rewind to whenever I said that lie. He was born in 42, and I'm stupid. So, this is in the 60s, is when this is happening.
Okay.
However, there was also a more gross side of... The JC life. It's like a club or an organization or something. Mm-hmm. That's what we're inferring from all of this shit.
How do you spell JC?
J-A-Y-C-E-E. It just sounds like a rich man's club kind of thing.
It's like some sort of club, but I don't understand what their mission statement is. We believe that faith in God gives meaning and purpose to human life, that the brotherhood of man transcends the sovereignty? Like, sovereignty. I don't know why, but I was like, sovereign. T-Y.
Sovereignty.
The sovereignty, that's it, of nations. That economic justice can best be won by free men through free enterprise, ew. That government should be of laws rather than of men. That Earth's greatest treasure lies in human personality, and that service to humanity is the best work of life. I think it's like a Christian.
Hmm.
Like,
well, that's going to make this really fun, because it involved prostitution, pornography, and drugs, which Gacy was deeply involved.
In the JCs? Yes. United States Junior Chamber.
Are they associated?
It's a leadership training and civic organization for people between the ages of 18 and 40.
That's not junior.
Areas of emphasis are business development, management skills, individual training, community service, and international connections. It's a nonprofit organization. I don't understand what they do. It's like hang out?
Like a wealthy business club kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they liked sex, apparently. Gacy was routinely cheating on his wife, and at the same time, mm-hmm. he opened a quote-unquote club in his basement for the young boys of Waterloo, where he allowed them to drink alcohol and make sexual advances towards him. So this is when he starts getting... fucked. Not like the action.
Not the action, but the
morality standpoint.
Yeah.
I
deem this morality fucked.
God. In March of 1968, two Waterloo boys aged at the ages of 16 and 15 at the time, so oof. That would probably be like, I don't know when it happened, but what if they were younger than that? Sorry. I just had like a little spiral because they are 16 and 15 and they accused him of sexually assaulting them in 68.
So they were younger than...
Yeah.
15.
Which is scary. He professed his innocence and it appeared for a minute that he was going to be cleared of all charges. Mm-hmm. But, in August that year, he hired another kid to beat up one of the accusers. That kid was caught and confessed to everything, and so Gacy was arrested. Before mm-hmm. the end of the year, he was convicted of sodomy and sentenced to 10 years in the Iowa State Penitentiary.
It's fucked up that, like, that's the charge, not pedophilia.
Yeah. Yeah. Right after he was imprisoned, his wife filed for divorce, which became final in 1969, and he never saw his children again.
I mean, yeah. Good.
While he was imprisoned, his father died from cirrhosis on Christmas.
So you just said that his dad died.
So yeah, his father died on Christmas Day, 1969. He was paroled in 1970 after only serving 18 months. After he was released, he moved back to Illinois to live with his mother and was able to, like, successfully hide this criminal record until, you know, later when he began to be investigated mm-hmm. for murder. So he got a job as a chef in Chicago, in a restaurant in Chicago. In 1971, with his mother's help financially, he bought a house at 8213 West Somerdale Avenue in an unincorporated area of Norwood Park Township, Cook County, which was surrounded by the northwest side Chicago neighborhood of Norwood okay. Park.
I was about to be like, what state is it this? And then I was like, you literally started it by being like, an Illinois murderer.
Yeah. The house had a 4-foot deep crawl space under the floor.
Don't like that.
Nope, not at all. On February 12th, 1971, Gacy was charged with disorderly conduct. A teenage boy claimed that he picked him up and tried to force him into sex. The complaint was dropped, though, when the boy did not appear in court. Mm. The Iowa Board of Parole did not learn of this, and Gacy was discharged from parole in October 1971. How do
you get charges put against you and your fucking parole officers don't find out?
Well, I think because no one in Illinois knew that he, like, had parole officers. No mm-hmm. one knew he was paroled.
So they just didn't tell his parole.
They didn't know to alert them because it was before.
This was before computers, been like, really.
Right, exactly. So they didn't have that technology to be like,
I didn't know you even could move.
Come get your man. I don't think you're technically allowed to, but I think it'd be a lot harder to enforce it whenever the technology
wasn't. Yeah, because, like, how do you find them?
Right, exactly. But on June 22nd, 1972, Gacy was arrested again and charged with battery after another young man said that Gacy flashed a sheriff's badge, lured him into his car, and forced him into sex, but again, the charges were dropped.
Jesus Christ.
Yep. In June 1972, so, like, same month that mm-hmm. he was arrested, he married Carol Hoff, who was a friend of his whenever they were teenagers. Hoff and her two daughters moved into this house. And in 1975, Gacy started his own business, PDM Contractors, which was a construction company.
He's doing a lot of different jobs. I would also like to say that it, like, pisses me off because I know that with these crimes that he's committing, people are, like, focusing on the fact that it's, like, gay. And they're like, that's the problem. And it's like, no, it's the rape and the pedophilia for me. That's the issue. It's not...
Well, and the murder.
He hasn't murdered anybody yet. The fact that he abused children sexually, and they're like, we're arresting you for sodomy. Like, bitch.
No, arrest him for what he did to the children. Yeah, it's like,
the issue is not that they're boys. The issue is that they are kids.
At this same time, his marriage also began to deteriorate. Carol and John stopped having sex, and John would go out late and stay out all night. Carol began finding wallets around the house with, ID cards of random mm-hmm. young men. And John also began bringing gay porn into the house. So they divorced in March of 76. So it's just going downhill.
At least that his wives are like, not putting up with shit.
Right, exactly. Like, you know, like, what?
Actually, let's just get divorced because this is a little much for me.
He also became active in the local Democratic Party, first volunteering to clean the party offices. In 75 and 76, he served on the Norwood Park Township Street Lighting Committee and eventually earned the title of precinct captain. God damn it, I'm about to sneeze.
You didn't even sneeze.
It went away. While he was serving as the precinct captain, he met and took a picture with First Lady Rosalind Carter, who was in town for the Polish Constitution Day parade that was held on May 6, 1978.
Oh.
Gacy was directing the parade that year for the third year in a row. Carter posed for pictures with Gacy and autographed the photo to John Gacy, best wishes, Rosalind Carter. So that's a fun little...
I mean, she didn't know.
Right.
People will also use that to be like, John Wayne Gacy was a Democrat. And it's like,
You're like, and? That doesn't matter. It's not the focus.
Yeah.
In July 1975, one of Gacy's employees, John Butkovich, disappeared. He had recently left Gacy's employment after an argument over back pay that he was owed. His parents urged the police to check him out, but nothing came of it, and his disappearance went unsolved. In December of 1976, another one of his employees, Gregory Godzik, disappeared, and his parents asked police to investigate Gacy, one of the last people known to have spoke to the boy, but in neither case did the police pursue Gacy, nor did they discover his criminal record.
Why did, fucking ACAB? Like, why?
Yeah.
Like, y'all's job is to investigate shit? Maybe, investigate shit?
Yeah, it was not a good time.
Yeah.
In January 1977, John Sizek, who was friends with the other two that were killed or disappeared, he also disappeared. Later that year, another one of his employees was arrested for stealing gasoline from a gas station, and the car he was driving had belonged to Sizek. Gacy said that he had sold the car to him before leaving town, and the police failed to pursue the matter further.
They weren't like, oh, why does he have this missing kid's car?
Yep.
Bro, this is insane. If, you, like... Ah! Okay, keep going.
And this is getting to, like, the end of the 70s. Like, this is 77 now.
Yeah, it's also like... Okay, maybe the first one, or even two, them not investigating him. But, like... If that many people who are missing are all connected to the same person, is no one going to be like, hey, what's up with that?
Yeah, nope, not a single connection here.
Irritating, love.
My phone keeps falling, and it's blocking my notes. Okay.
My legs fell asleep, so I'm just going to be down here.
He then Gacy started to get tired of digging holes in his crawl space. He wanted more space to be available at all times, so he hired one of his employees, David Cram, to come over and help make more space. He was also staying in the spare bedroom in Gacy's house. Ooh, sorry, this part just gets a little creepy.
Did he, like, know about the dead people?
No, I don't think so, but this part's fun. Well, fun's a word. One night, David came home from work and found Gacy drunk and in his clown costume. They had a few drinks, and then Gacy tricked David to put handcuffs on. He then started growling and began spinning him around the room, screaming, I'm going to rape you.
Oh my god!
David pushed Gacy down and grabbed the keys and escaped to his bedroom. Like, he was just like, oh, silly drunk antics, I'm gonna just go to bed.
Let me look away.
Yep. In March 1978... Gacy lured Jeffrey Rignall into his car. He chloroformed the man, took him back to his house, raped and tortured him, and dumped him in Lincoln Park. Police could come up with no leads, but Jeffrey remembered, even though like he was very much out of it because of chloroform, a black Oldsmobile, the Kennedy Expressway, and some side
streets. He wasn't dead?
No, he just got dumped in a park.
Okay.
So he sat outside the exit on that expressway until he saw that black car, which he then followed to Gacy's house. So police issued a warrant and arrested Gacy on July 15th. he was facing trial on a battery charge for the Rignall incident when, in December, he was arrested for the rest of the murders. In December 1977, a 19-year-old man complained that Gacy had kidnapped him at gunpoint and forced him into sex, but the Chicago police took no action.
What the fuck?
Robert Peast, a 15-year-old boy, disappeared on December 11th, 1978, from the DePlains Pharmacy where he worked after school. Just before he vanished, he told a coworker he was going to a house down the street to talk to some contractor about a job.
Wait, so he wasn't even a clown? He just had a clown costume?
Yeah.
I thought he was like a clown at like children's birthday parties.
I think that was just a horror movie.
Oh. What? I thought he like... Okay. So he just is like a clown for his own enjoyment?
I think so. And he also does did a bunch of paintings from prison. And they were like clowns and stuff, creepy.
Oh, okay. I don't know why. I thought he like his job was like being a children's birthday party clown. And then they found out he was like a pedophile and a murderer. And they were like, the clown.
John had been at the pharmacy that night discussing a remodeling job with the owner. But Gacy denied talking to Robert when the police called him the next day. However, these police did what the Chicago police failed to do and checked his record. Crazy fucking...
What a novel idea.
Right. Discovering that he had previously been to jail for sodomy. A search of his house on December 13th turned up a 1975 high school class ring, driver's licenses for other people, handcuffs, a 2x4 with holes drilled in the end, a syringe, clothing too small for him, and a photo receipt from the pharmacy where Robert worked. Then detectives noticed a strong, horrible smell coming from the crawl space beneath the house.
I know what's coming, I just don't want it to happen.
Yeah. On December 21st, 1978, one of Gacy's employees told the police that Gacy had confessed to more than 30 murders. But nothing happened, but he was arrested shortly after for possession of marijuana.
Gacy?
Yep.
Did they not open the crawl space?
Nope. They took out a second warrant, went back to his house, and that's when they found human remains in the crawl space.
Finally. Bro, so they were in his house on a search warrant, and they were just like, yo, it smells down there.
And they were like,
anyway,
we'll just
bye.
He probably just has an animal under there.
What the fuck?
Crazy that he could be linked to all of these missing disappearances.
Anyway.
He was then informed that he would face murder charges. He confessed to 25 to 30 murders, telling investigators that most were buried in the crawl space and on his property, and that he threw the last 5 bodies after the crawl space was full off the I-55 bridge into the DePlains River, including Robert's body. Gacy drew police a diagram of his crawl space to show show where the bodies were buried. He told police that he would pick up male teenage runaways or male prostitutes off the streets and take them back to his house with either the promise of money for sex, or he would just take them by force. He picked up at least one of the victims at a bus station. So, you know, just a runaway.
Runaway.
Once they got back to his house, he would handcuff them or tie them up. He would stick clothing in their mouths to muffle their screams. And then he would choke them with a rope or a board as he raped them. And would keep their bodies with him for as long as deep compensation would allow.
Bad.
Bad.
That's all I have to say about that.
The police had already gone back to the house to search for more remains, mostly under the crawl space. For the next 4 months, more and more human remains emerged from the house as reporters, TV news crews, and onlookers watched. 29 bodies were found in Gacy's crawl space and on his property between December 1978 and March 1979.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. The youngest identified victims were Samuel Stapleton and Michael Marino, both 14 years old.
Oh my God.
The oldest were Russell Nelson and James Mazzara, who were both 21 years old.
That's still so young.
Eight of the victims were so badly decomposed they were never able to be identified. And Robert Peast's body was discovered on the banks of the Des Plaines River on April 9th. But now we get to the good part.
The sentencing.
And the execution.
Oh shit. That's that good good. I'm so sorry.
On February 6, 1980, Gacy's trial began in Chicago. During the trial, he pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity. However, the plea was just rejected completely.
Mm-hmm. They were like, bitch, shut the fuck
right,
up.
Right, like, shut up. Get out. Gacy's lawyer, Sam Amarante, said that Gacy had moments of temporary insanity at the time of each individual murder, but regained his sanity before and after to lure and dispose of victims.
Okay, so you still were sane enough to cover up the crime?
Right, exactly. But that doesn't matter. That's not important.
Jesus. So I really thought the clown thing was more important to the story.
Maybe it is, and I just missed, like, a huge piece, honestly. That's also a very big possibility. I'm sure people listening to this are like, what the fuck is he doing?
He didn't even mention the clown.
I did once. The clown was mentioned. While he was on trial, he'd said that the only thing he was guilty of was that he was running a cemetery without a license.
Shut the fuck up. Why does he make me mad?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Here it is. Gacy regularly performed at children's hospitals and charitable events as Pogo or Patches the Clown.
So he was a clown on the side. I just skipped over that, apparently.
He had a side gig as a clown. So there are like... Oh, so he had two different clown personas.
Oh, I hate that.
He had Pogo the Clown, which was his happy clown persona, and then Patches the Clown, who was the serious clown.
That's absolutely terrifying. That's worse than most of this, honestly. Not really, but like...
So, because the general public knew him as the clown, like, because he performed at, like, events and, like, went to the hospital to, like, hang out with kids and stuff, yeah. Which is a gross sentence, knowing who he is.
Yeah.
People like in the community when he got arrested started calling him the killer clown. And that's why people like remember him as the clown. Also on his Wikipedia page, there's just a whole section that's like clown. Like it's like his return to Chicago, second marriage, divorce, clown.
Clown. At one point during his trial, his defense also tried to claim that all 33 murders were accidental deaths as a part of erotic asphyxia.
30 times?
33 times.
33 times?
But the coroner countered this assertion with evidence that his claim was impossible. Thank God. And he had also confessed to police previously and couldn't get that evidence suppressed. So they were like, dude, you already confessed. We know you killed them. Why are you trying to say you didn't? No.
Yeah.
But he was found guilty on March 13th and sentenced to death.
Nice. So. I'm not like usually pro death penalty. Like, I think if I were to have an argument with somebody about like death penalty versus not death penalty, I would typically vote against death penalty because it actually costs the taxpayers more to put someone to death because and they normally are like on death row for a very, very long time.
Yeah, not only that, it's also just extremely inhumane and everything because apparently it's like extremely painful.
Yeah. Which is... But there are just some people who I'm like, I don't really care. You can
right
fucking
that's okay
whatever. Like, I'm not pro death penalty, but I'm like, it's not like you don't deserve it.
Yeah. Well, you want to get to his execution?
Yes.
On May 10th, 1994, he was executed at Stateville Correctional Center in Crest Hill, Illinois, by lethal injection. His last meal consisted of a dozen deep-fried shrimp, a bucket of original recipe chicken from KFC, a pound of fresh strawberries, and french fries.
Bro.
Large crowds of people gathered for execution parties outside the penitentiary, with a lot of people getting arrested for public intoxication, open container violations, and disorderly conduct.
See, like, that's where it starts to get weird, is because I'm not, like, obviously I get people being, like, I literally was just, like, fucking good when you said that he died. Like, I understand the vibe of, like, yay, ding dong, the witch is dead kind of energy. But I'm also kind of, like, on some level, do you not feel, like, weird being, like,
yay, this man
this guy's
dead.
Dying, let's throw a party.
Vendors sold Gacy-related t-shirts and other merchandise, and the crowd cheered at the moment when Gacy was pronounced dead.
Because I just feel like there's, like, what are you celebrating? Like, yeah, he's dead, but, like, all the people he killed are still dead.
Right.
Like, but I guess, I don't know. It's just weird. I guess it's human nature. We used to, like, put people in cages and, like, watch them get eaten by lions, right?
Probably. That sounds like some
biblical shit.
Wasn't
that a thing? Like, when people committed crimes in, like, ancient Rome, they would, like, get put in the Colosseum and everybody would watch them, like, have to try to fight a lion. Yeah.
See, I took it a lot more literally, and, like, lion in a zoo and just throwing a kid in.
A kid.
Well, you said kids. And so I'm...
Did I say kids?
Yeah, you did. You said just watching kids get put in a cage with a lion and, like, get eaten. And
I did not mean
that's
kids,
why I was
I meant
like, I
people.
Just imagine like a 10-year-old getting yeeted into a lion's cage.
Jimmy stole from the gift shop. We will now throw him in with the lions. If he can escape, he's pronounced innocent. If the lion eats him, he's guilty.
That's exactly how the judicial system worked back then.
That's how it freaking worked for like the witch trials.
If she dies, she's
they would, like,
not guilty. If she
lives,
she's
drowns,
a witch.
If she can swim, she's a witch, but if she drowns, then she wasn't a witch, but she's still dead.
Sorry, our bad. That one's
R.I.P.
on us.
Yeah.
According to reports, he didn't express any remorse. His last words to his lawyer in his cell were to the effect that killing him would not bring anyone back. And it is reported that his last words were, "Kiss my ass," which he said to a correctional officer while being sent to the execution chamber. Before the execution began, the lethal chemicals unexpectedly solidified, clogging the IV tube that led into his arm, preventing any other stuff from going in.
What the hell? Is he a witch?
Blinds covering the window through which witnesses could observe the objection. Were closed, and the Jesus Christ, why I keep saying ejection? Execution team replaced the clogged tube with a new one. 10 minutes later, the blinds were reopened and the execution resumed. It took 18 minutes to complete. After his execution, his brain was removed, and is in the possession of Dr. Helen Morrison, who interviewed Gacy and other serial killers in an attempt to isolate common personality traits of violent sociopaths. However, an examination of Gacy's brain after his execution by the forensic psychiatrist hired by his lawyers revealed no abnormalities.
I understand now that you meant, like, she took it to study it. At first, I thought you meant she just, like, had it in a jar in her office and was like, this brain is John Wayne Gacy's.
It's mine now.
Yeah, she was just like, this will look great on the mantle. It'll be a great conversation starter.
I want it fair and square. So
he told me I have dibs on his brain.
And I got it. It's in a jar. Look at it. Look at it go. It jiggles.
Jesus Christ.
So this is a list of known Gacy victims with the date they disappeared. Timothy McCoy, he was 18 and disappeared on January 3rd, 1972. John Butkovich was 17 and disappeared on July 21st, 1975. Daryl Sampson was 18, disappeared on April 6, 1976. Randall Reffitt was 15, disappeared on May 14th, 1976. Sam Stapleton was 14. He disappeared on May 14th, 1976. Michael Bonin was 17, disappeared on June 3rd, 1976.
Jesus Christ.
William Carroll was 16, disappeared on June 13th, 1976. Rick Johnston was 17, disappeared August 6th, 1976.
Let's just throw out 1976. Bad year.
Well, and 77 and 78, because I'm still going. There's still more.
Fuck. Okay.
Kenneth Parker was 16. I'm going to stop doing the date of disappearance because it's making me sad, so I'm going to say their names and ages. Michael Marino was 14. Gregory Godzik was 17. John Sizek was 19. John Prestige was 20. Matthew Bowman was 19. Robert Gilroy was 18. John Mowry was 19. Russell Nelson was 21. Robert Winch was 16. Tommy Bowling was 20. David Talsma was 19. William Kindred was 19. Timothy O'Rourke was 20. Frank Landingen was 19. James Mazzara was 21. And Robert Peast was 15.
I'm glad you, like, had those, because I feel like so often when we talk about serial killers or just, like, people who did horrible things, not, like, we specifically, but just, like, we as a society or whatever.
We spend more time like, talking so much... about the person who did it and not the victims.
Exactly, and the victims are not even named, right. And it's, like, just fucked up.
8 of Gacy's victims are still unidentified. It's also believed that there may have been other victims never identified or found who are buried at other locations.
Mm-hmm.
There was a 9th unidentified victim who was identified in June 2007 as Timothy McCoy from Nebraska. McCoy was Gacy's first known and identified victim. And that is the absolutely terrible and fucked up story of John Wayne Gacy.
I really thought there was more about a clown.
I mean, apparently there was. I'm just stupid.
Yeah, but I thought, like, he, like, I don't know why. I guess just from, like, popular media, because there's this picture of him as a clown. You can find it on Wikipedia under the clown section. Of, like, him as a clown, and it gets circulated a lot when people are talking about John Wayne Gacy. Right. So I guess that kind of just, like, went in my brain. I thought that he was, like, a birthday party clown as his career, and that he, like, took kids...
from the birthday parties?
Like, he used his clown persona to, like, lure children to him. That's what I thought happened.
Yeah. It's not...
which also would be fucked up, but it's a little more whimsical just as fucked way. Up what he did do. Yeah.
But, nope, he was just...
Well, not whimsical is not the word I would use.
That's not the word I meant to say.
It's more like horror movie story, right, exactly. I feel like. But I feel like that's a thing, is that whenever people are talking about, like, serial killers, or I hear it a lot when people are talking about, like, human trafficking and stuff like that, they focus on the idea of, like, oh, this could happen to anybody, but, like, and it could to some degree, but I think that there's such a, like, amount of privilege involved that people don't talk about. And just, like, in this story, is people target vulnerable people. Right. So they target people who are, like, poor or runaways or prostitutes or whatever. Like, people who won't be, quote-unquote, missed. Or, like, that people won't notice that they're gone, or that the police won't put in the effort to investigate their disappearance.
But, I mean, it's sad because for a while they just didn't. They didn't care. Yeah. They were like, oh, they just disappeared. That's fine. Cool.
This incoming rant. When people talk about, like, human trafficking, for example, they always focus on, like, I don't know if you have seen this as much. It's a thing that I feel like gets targeted at women a lot, is, like, you see these, like, copy text posts. They're, like, basically fucking creepypastas on the internet that are, like, there was this one recently that was like, if you get a text from this number with this link about a package, do not click the link because then they'll get your location. And I'm like, I'm sorry. So you're saying that if I click this link, my location will be sent to some mystery human traffickers who are going to what? Just like pull up in a bunch of like in a van and like put me in their van and like. And there was another one that was like people saying if you're on a college campus and someone comes up to you talking about God the Mother, like they're trying to kidnap you into human trafficking, right, I've seen like that run one a away.
Lot too. Like, or when I was at UCF a lot, I would like circulate every few months saying that someone came up to them at the Publix on Alafaya saying that, and like,
and it's like bullshit. And here's the thing: is obviously you should be like. Don't click mysterious links. Don't get in strangers' vehicles. Like, you should always be aware of your surroundings, and I'm not saying that that's a bad message, but I do think that there is, like, this emphasis on, like, being kidnapped from the grocery store or on your college campus or whatever, and, like, that's not really the reality for most human trafficking survivors. They are typically brought into trafficking from someone they know, and they are usually from vulnerable groups. So they are people who have an addiction to drugs or alcohol, or they're disabled people. A lot of people who are brought into human trafficking are autistic or have some other disability. Like, it's not the story that people want to spread, and I feel like it's kind of taking away from, like, raising real awareness. Like, a lot of people are brought in by family members, right, or exactly. Boyfriends, or like, you're most likely to be trafficked by someone you know,
right,
and trust. That's how they bring you into it, because you trust them.
But I mean, it's easier to share the narrative of like, oh, don't trust scary links.
Yeah, and I feel like that brings us into this place where we, like, when we're talking about victims of anything like human trafficking, murder, whatever, we focus on these, like, quote unquote, like, perfect victims, like these, like, freaking white girls who were like middle upper class and like they were kidnapped, and obviously that is horrible and sad and just as awful, but it's also like the majority of the time the people who are victims of these sort of crimes are not that, right. They're homeless, or they are like addicted to drugs or something, or they are runaways. Anyway, so that's my rant.
But yeah, that was a rough story. I mean, it's a very well-known one, but
yeah, still a, but it's awful.
Yeah, and terrible.
Well, I'm going to be talking about something that normally when I talk about paranormal stuff, I'm like, ooh, it's fun and spooky. This one's not super fun. It's also sad.
Should we take a break? Do we do that
still? Yes. I was just giving a little teaser.
I was listening to an old episode, and we did that, and I was like, oh, we did not do that in our last episode we recorded.
We'll figure it out. It's fine. Okay. But yeah, we'll take a tiny little baby break.
BRB.
It's actually also getting very dark in my room, so I am going to
light them up, bitch.
Okay, and we are back.
Congratulations. I hope you enjoyed our ad. Bella, that's a candle. You can't eat that. Sorry, my cat is putting her face in an open flame.
Oh my god.
I'll,
you know that TikTok thing?
Probably cut that out.
Oh no. Oh no, no. That's you and the cat right now.
Literally. Oh my god, I saw that TikTok, but in the last episode of Grey's. Mm-hmm. They're like really preparing it for Meredith to die. Sorry, spoilers to people who watch that and haven't watched this episode, but oop, that's your fault, not mine. And she keeps like the episodes keep ending with her on this beach with Derek.
Mm-hmm. I've seen the trailers for that.
And she is like trying to run towards him, but can't because
he did, and she right. did too.
Well, not yet. And he's like, the sand isn't real. And so at the end of this last episode, she starts, like, sprinting towards him. Mm-hmm. And then, like, full-on trips and face plants in the sand.
Oh, my God.
And so there was a TikTok someone did. It was like, oh, no. Oh, no. And it was, like, each frame of her falling. And it was so funny. But if Meredith Grey dies, I will probably riot. Because I've
watched the show. How has everybody from fucking season one basically died at this point.
Because there's 17 seasons and no one but Ellen Pompeo and Chandra Wilson have wanted to keep doing it for this long. Okay, and whoever, like, Richard Weber is, I cannot remember his name. James Pickens.
I don't think the mortality rate of doctors is that high.
It is definitely not. But I mean, not everyone's been killed off.
I feel like it's been a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean,
I guess I can only think of two big ones off the top of my head.
There is the plane crash and the car crash.
I guess we're just spoiling everything now. For I'm sorry if
you watched Grey's Anatomy. Well, to be fair, the plane crash and car crash were a long time ago.
Yeah. Well, here's my thing: is I watched the first couple seasons, and then somebody told me that George dies, and
I forgot about George.
I don't want to do that, so I just stopped watching it.
Well, I found out, like, or this could be false, but this is what Reddit said about why George left, and it made me really mad.
Wasn't it because people were homophobic towards him on set?
Yeah, Burke was, like, the cardiologist, doctor.
Yeah, but didn't they fire him after the first season?
No. Because they were going to, but then he wasn't supposed to be a main character. Mm-hmm. He was supposed to just be kind of ancillary, and he was going to be written off at the end of the first season. But he became, like, the, like, viewer's favorite.
Why?
George is so cute.
No, not George. Oh, I thought we were talking about Preston.
No, I thought we were talking about George. I'm like, George is so sweet. What do you mean? Why?
No, I was saying I thought that Preston got written out after, like, the first or second season because, what's her name? Christina?
Yeah. I mean, he got written off because the backlash started happening because of George.
That's what I meant. I thought they fired him because he was
homophobic. Not immediately, oh, okay. No. He outed George to producers. Or, like, people on set, basically.
Keep his name out your mouth.
And so he, like, in result, started getting less screen time and everything.
So, wait. You're telling me...
It's a very, like, this very queer-friendly, queer-positive show started discriminating against someone because they were queer. Yes.
And we support this show?
Well, that's... Okay. Grey's Anatomy was not good at all about representing queer and trans people well at all in the beginning. I mean, they have...
I mean, it's like 2004, right?
Right. They had trans characters being played by cis people.
Yeah. I mean, that's still happening today.
And, like, very poorly cis people. Like, they were, like, very poorly done. Yeah, like, the trans woman had, like, a 5 o'clock shadow and a shitty wig.
Jesus Christ.
So, like, it was very obvious they put, like, minimal effort into it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, now they have trans characters being played by actual trans people. Mm-hmm. The queer characters are being played by queer people.
That's good, at least. I was I've been watching Dawson's Creek recently because they put it on Netflix, and I was like, okay, and I started watching it. And I'm aware that the show is from the 90s. It started in 1997, but I was watching an episode in season, like, 2, and they just, like... said a trans slur, and I was just like, ah! And then I was like, the 90s were bad.
Yeah, they were. But I mean, Grey's got a lot better with representation after it became more, like, female-led.
Mm-hmm.
Like, once Ellen Pompeo became one of the, like, directors or whatever she is.
Oh, okay. I thought it was always Shonda Rhimes or whatever.
It was. But it was still, like, in the beginnings of it, it was
a lot of male, like, producers and stuff.
Yeah, like, the producers and stuff were mostly, like, men, like, cis men.
I mean,
and
now I'm always it's more a like fan women. Of growth.
Yeah. And so, like, I mean, the acting even in the show got a lot better throughout the times because it was horrible in the beginning. And it still has moments where I'm like, ooh, why am I watching this?
I thought the, like, main cast was good in season one.
Yeah.
But it's, like side people, you mean?
Yeah. But, I mean, it's getting better.
Although, in season one, I've seen it a million times, the episode where the two people on the train are, like, stuck together with the pole, and they can only save one of them.
Ugh.
Anyway, so I'm actually going to be talking about a hospital.
Oh, fun. Which hospital?
So I'm telling the story of the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum, which...
That's a name.
Yes, I would like to give a little disclaimer before we start that obviously I think most of us know that, like, these quote-unquote asylums and things were awful, and the word lunatic is not like a word that I enjoy using in this context, and I'm only really using it because that is the like actual name of the facility.
Not, yeah, not just
not your because own I'm like, yeah. Anyway, so it's currently still called the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum, and it's an abandoned psychiatric hospital. It still exists, not like to treat patients, but as like a place where you can take tours.
Like and the building is still standing and everything.
Yeah, the building is still standing and you can like go in it. There's like, it's like owned by a company that like runs tours of it, but it's not like, that's all it really is.
What? Where is it at?
It's in Weston, West Virginia.
Mm.
So it's actually like, it's this gorgeous building. It's really well known for like architecture. I think it's still the largest like stonemason building in America. It's like, if you look at it, it looks like this, like if you saw a picture of it, you wouldn't think like, oh, psychiatric hospital. You would think like English countryside manor or something like that. Like, it's beautiful.
Ooh, fun.
Well,
not fun knowing what it is, but fun of what it could have been.
Yeah, so it was commissioned in the early 1850s, and the reason it's so beautiful is because it was actually originally, like, one of the first developments for mental patients that had a lot of, like, it was very hopeful in its, like, construction, and people thought it was going to, like, revolutionize the way that people treated the mentally ill, because it was designed and founded by this guy named Thomas Story Kirkbird. Actually, let me check something real quick.
What a fun name that is.
It went back and forth calling it Kirkbird and Kirk. Okay, so it's not, I'm going to say that again because I said it wrong. So it was designed and founded by this guy named Thomas Story Kirkbride. It's Kirkbride, who was a doctor, and he was a mental health advocate, and he founded the association that is now known as the American Psychiatric Association.
Oh.
So at the time in the 1850s, you know, people believed like mental illness, like any sort of mental illness, was this irreversible condition, and it's something to be like super ashamed of. So basically all mental health facilities at the time were just like places for people to drop off their mentally ill family members who they didn't really want to like bother with, who they were ashamed of, and the mental health facilities would just like lock them up in dark rooms and made no actual attempt to help them at all.
That makes me sad.
Yeah, but this guy Kirkbride, he wanted to create like a facility that was different and actually put the patient's needs first. So even though a lot of his like medicinal ideas, I mean, it was like 1850, so like they didn't really know a ton about like medicine and stuff, like they were still freaking using heroin to like treat shit. So even though, like, he didn't
put some cocaine on it, it'll fix it.
Yeah. Just rub some coke in the wound, you'll be fine. Drink some bourbon,
take some acid.
But yeah, a lot of his ideas did lead to an overall more humane treatment of disabled people. So he basically designed these facilities, and the way he designed them is he emphasized the importance of like outdoor time and fresh air and having some level of self-sufficiency for the patients, because most of these people literally were locked indoors in like dark rooms with no windows, and he was like, no. So all like his buildings had these like 12-foot ceilings and like gigantic windows, so the hospital was always like filled with light, and he had the ventilation set up so there were like breezeways of fresh air coming through the buildings, and he wanted patients to be able to like walk around on their own and have some stimulation, because he believed that people would like make more progress when they had control, whereas like at the time most people believed that the only way to control disabled and mentally ill people was like to lock them up and give them no self-sufficiency. But he was like very against that. He was like, they should be able to walk around on their own and like do what they want to do and like go the fuck outside. So his ideas of like this new form of mental health facility were put into place for 73 different hospitals, and they were like 73 Kirkbride hospitals across the country, and including the Trans Allegheny Lunatic Asylum. So the construction of this particular one in West Virginia, it wasn't great. It started being built with prison labor, including slave labor from black convicts. But somebody like reported on that, and then they replaced all the prison labor with like very skilled stonemasons from Germany and Ireland, which is part of why people are very like wowed with the architecture, because they had these like professional stonemasons like building it.
Well, that part's cool. The first part's really bad, but the second part was really cool.
And the construction was halted in 1861, I believe. I forgot to write down the year. During the Civil War, because obviously West Virginia was in the South. So it was halted, and I believe I got conflicting evidence. Some people said that it was used as a hospital for Civil War soldiers, but other people said it wasn't used as a hospital, but they did use it to like house some Civil War soldiers. Either way, there were Civil War soldiers there on the property during the Civil War at certain times, but the construction was halted because it was funded by the government, and they were like, actually, we're going to take that money back and use it for the war. But either way, the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum was opened in 1863. And here's what I actually find interesting, is that name was changed before it even opened. It opened under the name the West Virginia Hospital for the Insane. But anyway, so this particular hospital, it could house 250 patients, where they would each have their own comfortable room that they could have, like a private room for themselves. The grounds were completely private and secluded so that the patients could go outside and walk around. And it included a working farm with a dairy herd and fresh water wells and a gas well and a cemetery. So it was like a full self-sufficient kind of little society, kind of. Their farm and dairy herd made fresh food for everybody, for the patients and the staff. And so the ultimate goal for Kirkbride and then the architect Richard Snowden Andrews was to create this like state-of-the-art facility to make the patients feel at home, so they could have like healthy, fresh food. They had outdoor areas to walk around in. They had places to get exercise and like all of these state-of-the-art medicinal facilities. And it was open and running for 18 years before everything really started to go downhill. So in 1881, there was like a huge spike in mental health diagnoses, and the stigma surrounding the diagnoses increased as well with the spike. So there was an overflow of patients that were being assigned to this hospital. And because of that, they had these like very peaceful facilities, but they were being completely overrun by patients. Like they only had room for 250 people max. They had 250 rooms, but they were like 500 patients over capacity.
Oh my God.
In 1881. When this happened. And the hospital just, like, couldn't keep up with all of these freaking patients. So their conditions began to just, like, rapidly decline, because all of the patients were being crammed together with, like, four or five people in these rooms that were meant for one person. Because the whole idea was that they would all get their own private rooms. And now five of them were being put in the same room. The farm that they had was designed to provide for 300 people. So the 250 patients plus the staff. So with the increase in patients, they had like almost 800 people at this facility, so they didn't have enough food for anybody. And patients began to suffer from malnutrition, which was only exacerbating their mental health issues.
Right.
By 1938, the asylum was six times over capacity. And the patients inside were basically left to their own devices because they didn't have nearly enough staff members to care for them. It reached its peak in the 1950s, when the hospital was holding 2,600 patients, which was 10 times more than it ever intended to house. Remember, it had 250 rooms.
Jesus Christ.
So we're thinking 1950s, it started being built in the 1850s, it was 70 years of these conditions.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So in the 1950s, this newspaper called the Charleston Gazette sent an investigative crew to write about the conditions. And they found that patients were sleeping on the floor or just wherever. And the whole place was like freezing because they didn't have heat. And no, like most people didn't have beds or anywhere to sleep because there wasn't enough furniture. They didn't have enough staff to clean, so the hospital was, like, disgusting. The windows were covered in grime, so there wasn't, like, any... Like, literally, this place was built to have these giant windows, so there would always be sunlight in the hallways, but they were so covered in, like, shit that there wasn't any light coming through. The wallpaper was, like, peeling and disintegrating or was just, like, torn off completely. Patients whom the orderlies deemed, quote, unable to be controlled, had to be locked in cages, but the cages were just like left out in common areas and hallways with people locked in them, because they didn't want to put them in the rooms because they were trying to, there weren't enough bedrooms for like most of these people. And there was such a wide range of people being treated, and I put heavy air quotes around the word treated, like people that were there included alcoholics, addicts, epileptics, people with learning disabilities, and like just completely unknown disorders. There were also people committed for, quote, homosexual tendencies. And like women could be admitted to the asylums by their husbands for pretty much any reason. Like women were left there because they inherited money and their husbands wanted the money, because their husbands were having an affair and didn't want to deal with them anymore. Because like for literally any reason, a man could just bring his wife and be like, I do not want her. Take her.
She's yours now. Thank you.
Yeah. And children who, like a lot of the times if a man brought his wife, he would bring, like he would leave the children with the wife too. And the children either were just like there, or they could be adopted out of the facility without consent of the mom, because the mom was deemed, quote, insane. So they would just like adopt their children to like strangers.
That's fucking horrible.
Yeah. So in the early 1950s, the asylum became home to what was called the West Virginia Lobotomy Project, which was, it was specifically put in this hospital as an attempt to lower the facility's population.
So it was so meant to kill people.
They don't say specifically that it was meant to kill people. I think they were like, well, the lobotomies will cure them and then we can discharge them. But like, it was killing people. It was meant to kill people. So, and basically what this did was it made it a training ground for experimental lobotomies. So this guy named Walter Freeman, who you might know if you watched Ratched, as I said at the beginning of the podcast, he was this famous surgeon and he was a big activist for, or a big advocate for lobotomies. So he began doing his lobotomy project in this hospital. This wasn't all at this one hospital, but in the course of his lifetime, Walter Freeman performed over 4,000 lobotomies that left many perfectly healthy patients with severe and permanent physical and cognitive damage.
That's fucking terrible. And we're not even at the haunting part yet. We're just at the fucked yeah. up shit part still.
He had this lobotomy method that he invented called the ice pick method, which was basically where he took a very thin pointed rod, like an ice pick, and he would put it into the patient's eye socket, and then using a hammer, he would just like hammer the ice pick into their brain, which was inside their eye socket, and it would sever the connective tissue in the brain's prefrontal cortex. And this resulted in multiple deaths. Like, he killed a lot of people doing this. I mean, like, as you would when you are literally just shoving a needle at random into their brain. Are we paying attention to the years here? Because this is insane. By the 1980s, the hospital had received a reduced population due to changes in the treatment of mental illness. So they... It's like
100 years later.
Yeah, but people who couldn't be controlled were still being, like, locked in cages and stuff like that. Obviously, in like by 1980, they were kind of like, oh, maybe we shouldn't be locking people up for being gay, and maybe like men shouldn't be allowed to just like drop off their wives who are perfectly healthy here because they don't want them anymore. But, like, they were still fucking locking people in cages and just, like, leaving them in the hallway. In February of 1986, the then Governor Arch Moore announced plans to build a new psychiatric facility somewhere else in the state, and they were going to convert the Weston Hospital to a prison. The hospital finally closed in 1994 after over 100 years of living in horrible conditions and just basically abusing patients. But it was never reopened or converted to another facility or a prison or anything like that. It was just abandoned. In 2007, the grounds were purchased by this family, and they decided to turn it into a site for tours. It was deemed a historical site in, like, 1990, so this family bought it so they could renovate it. Not to, like, live in, but they're trying to, like, restore it to, like, its former glory because it was this big, like, architectural feat or whatever. But they do tours during the day that are, like, historic tours, and then at night and on weekends they do ghost tours. And you can actually literally, it's $100 per person, but you can spend 8 hours in the hospital, and they'll just, like, let you, they'll, like, give you a walking tour where they, like, tell you the history and everything, but then they just, like, let you roam free and look for ghosts for 8 hours.
No, thank you. That's how someone dies. No, thank you.
The rooms are still filled with medical equipment and, like, decrepit furniture, and there's still, like, wheelchairs in the hallways. Like, they have not moved anything. They, like, left it as it was. So there's not, like, actually a ton of information about the very, like, specific ghosts, but, like, everybody who goes in there says that they, like, feel this, like, just presence of spirits as they're walking around the building. A lot of people have reported hearing children, like, laughing or playing. And there are a couple spirits that a lot of people have seen. So there's this one, like, spirit of a little girl, and people see her, like, running around or laugh or, like, hear her laughing. And people believe it's this little girl named Lily who was born in the asylum and then died there as a little girl. People also have reported seeing a man lying in, like, bathtubs. Like, they'll go into the bathrooms and they'll just, like, see a man lying in the bathtub. And they believe it's this guy named Jesse who died in a bathtub while receiving treatment. And I don't know what kind of treatment it was, but I'm, like, thinking about the show Ratched. And they, like, do that. I don't know if you watched this far, but they do this thing where there's this woman who is gay.
Well, they boiled her?
Yeah, they, like, put her in one bathtub where it's, like, boiling water. And then they, like, put her in another bathtub where it's, like, freezing water. Mm-hmm. And I'm, like, wondering if it was something like that, how he died.
That's fucking horrible.
But I couldn't find any, like, specifics. People also have reported seeing the ghosts of, like, Civil War soldiers walking around, which is why I think it, I said earlier, like, Civil War soldiers were there at one point. Right. I don't know if it was a hospital or if it, like, they just stayed there, but people see ghosts of Civil War soldiers there sometimes. And another big one is that people see the ghosts of these, like, two teenage boys in one of the bathrooms, and people, like, leave them cigarettes and gum and candy and stuff like that. So one of the bathrooms just has, like, these, like, offerings of, like, gum and cigarettes and stuff. Many people reporting things like flashlights turning on by themselves, doors closing, things moving, and a lot of this will happen, like, because people offer spirits cigarettes in, like, as rewards for proving themselves. So they'll be like, I will give you a cigarette if you close this door, and then the door will close. Because, you know, it was like a lot of the people there died between, like, 1900 and 1950.
Right.
So it was a big, like, probably all nicotine addicted.
Yeah.
And another, like, big thing is in 2008, you know the show Ghost Adventures? They did an episode there in 2008 where they contacted a spirit, and the spirit told them his name was Jacob, and the spirit, like, kept asking where his beer was and, like, accusing them of hiding his beer. And then a few years later, the person who's now the owner of the building found a bunch of hospital admission forms from 1892, and she found a form for a man named Jacob Ayers, who was admitted for alcoholism and delusions, and one of his most persistent delusions was he believed that everybody was hiding his beers from him.
Dear God.
Yeah. So I wish I had like more specific like ghostly stories, but I just found like all these stories of people saying they went there and that it was like such a like they just felt like surrounded by like ghost presences, but right. There's not like specifically like this ghost did this and this ghost did that kind of thing. But I was still like, it's kind of an interesting story either way.
Yeah. I mean, it's very depressing, but I love a good ghost story.
I think it makes me so sad because it's like, it started like as this like revolutionary idea of like, they'll be able to like go outside on their own and they'll be able to like have self-sufficiency and we'll make sure they have like healthy food and it'll be these they'll be able to stay in this like beautiful facility. And then it just like, because the fucking government was like putting all of these people there, they like ruined it.
I mean, yeah. It's
so, in conclusion, fuck the government.
The government fucks everything up.
Yep.
That's what we've learned from today's episode, kids.
Thanks for coming.
The police can't investigate a pedophile, and the government fucks up mental health.
It's crazy.
Both things that are still very true.
I'm like, yay socialism, but then I'm like, actually, fuck the government. So,
fuck the government in all forms.
Yeah. Am I a socialist or an anarchist? Who knows?
Maybe a mix of both.
I think that's a thing, like an anarchistic socialist.
Or a socialistic anarchist.
Hey.
you just gotta.
Is there a difference?
Probably not.
Anyway, so that is the story of the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum. And you know what I think is like kind of bullshit? I'm not like trying to shit on the people who bought the place, but the name Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum was given to this hospital in the early 1850s when it was first under development. Before it even opened, it got changed to Weston Insane Asylum. And then I think later on it got changed to just like the Weston Mental Health Facility. So then when they reopened it for tours and stuff, they put it back to its original name. And I think that's partially because they like wanted the words lunatic asylum in the name because sounds scarier. And I feel like that's kind of fucked up.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. But, you know, capitalism, baby.
I'm not trying to like shit on the people who own it now because like I don't know them. I don't know their truth. But like, because I'm like, come take a tour of the Weston Mental Hospital. I feel like does not have the same like, ooh, spooky, scary energy as like, come look at the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum. Do you know what I mean? Please don't die.
This has been a podcast brought to you by cold medicine. Even though all of these coughs are getting edited out, just know there's been a large majority of very violent coughing going on.
Yeah.
That I'm going to have to go back and edit out.
Brought to you by the coronavirus. Except not, because you tested negative.
I did. I am not infected with the coronavirus.
The coronavirus.
I was like going back and forth between saying COVID or coronavirus, and it came out coronavirus.
I feel like it's like, do you remember like the first couple months when we were all like, the coronavirus? What is that?
Yeah,
wash your hands. And now we're all like, COVID.
we can't leave our house. I haven't left my house in 6 months.
Yeah.
I mean, I do go to work 5 days a week, which is so much fun to have to go and work in a global pandemic.
Yeah, we're both. Although, I guess, like, technically, essential workers aren't even a thing anymore, because literally, like, everybody I know just goes to work now.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like every company was just like, okay, and we'll all just go back to work, no more working from home, we'll do it very quietly and pretend it's not happening, and it's like, you guys know the cases are at an all-time high right now, right?
Like, Stevie's mom's company is still doing work from home.
Really?
And she says they're probably going to be doing it until, like, at least sometime next year.
I feel like most jobs, you can work from home. Like, yeah. Especially, like, office jobs and stuff like that. Both my parents still have to, like, go to their office. And I guess it's because Florida and, like, friggin' Ron DeSantis hates us. literally wants us all to die, I guess.
Meanwhile, Illinois is going back into, like, a form of lockdown. I haven't looked into what it entails completely yet. Mm-hmm. But I got the alert, like, a few days ago.
I think Florida was literally on lockdown. The only time we were on lockdown was during the freaking, like, height of the George Floyd protests. They were all of a sudden like, actually, we all need to stay home. Yeah. And it's like, shut the fuck up.
And then they started to, like, release restrictions and stuff, thinking it would stop the protests and take away coverage of the protest if other people's things could go on, but mm-hmm. it didn't. They just got to then cover a higher increase in COVID cases.
It's actually insane to me that they were like, oh, there's a deadly pandemic. We've got to keep on keeping on. But then the second there's protests, there's like, actually, we all need to stay home, and there's now a curfew. And it's like, bro, like, you really care more about people exercising their First Amendment right than you do about people dying from this disease. Like, it really makes you more mad that people are protesting than it does that people are dying.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry I keep going on political rants today. It's like just a day for that, I guess.
It's a great time that we happen to live in, isn't it? Just so much fun.
Yeah. Was Biden president-elect when we recorded our last episode, or has that happened since? Ugh, it's our first episode.
Was he?
I think we were like, I don't think it was called yet, but we were both like, he's probably.
Well, no, because it was called 2 weeks ago.
Was it?
Yeah.
I feel like we're living in like a time warp.
Yeah, nothing feels real. I mean, at this point, Georgia's going into, like, its third recount, I think.
I don't even know what's going on.
Each time, they've been like, nope, Biden still won.
I don't know if this is true because it was given to me by a 15-year-old and then I didn't fact check, but one of my students told me that he was like, did you know that the second, like, Trump started losing, Melania packed her bags and left the White House? And I was like, what? And he was like, it's true. And then I was like, you know what? I'm not going to fact check you.
I'm going to just trust you.
Yeah. So I don't think that's true, but like, how amazing if it was. If like the second he started losing, she was like, well, it's been real.
She's like, you know what? I'm not going to stay here for this shit show. I know what's about to happen. I'm going to just go ahead and head home. Yeah. I'll see him in a few months. Maybe.
She's like, oh my God, thank you. I can finally go back to New York.
Someone tweeted that they were like, if Biden really wants to unite this country, then he would pardon President Trump whenever he takes office. And I'm like,
no.
Nah, man. He needs to answer for his shit.
Since I'm going on all these fucking rants today, I'll go on another one. You know what pisses me off? All these, like, Republican people act like Democrats. Oh, Democrats need to compromise to unite the country. And I'm like, after fucking 4 years of you guys being like, haha, libtards, haha, cry, like, snowflake, that stuff. Not even 4 years. Fucking 12 years, because during Obama's presidency, they were, like, doing the same shit, where they were like, why are Republicans allowed to, like, do everything in their power to, like, alienate Democrats, but, like, oh, Democrats need to unite the country. You need to be nice to the Trump supporters.
Right.
Nah.
All of this coming along, like, right after Trump is, like, starting to lose.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, no. We can still be friends, you guys. Like, political differences don't have to separate us. No.
Like,
these kind of political differences do. Yeah, you can kindly go fuck yourself. And I say that with my whole chest.
Yeah. But on that note, I think we are good.
Yeah, we'll be back next week with some more spooky, scary content, probably with more political rants, because who knows what's going to happen in the next few weeks.
I'm always down for a political rant.
I feel like, honestly, every day there's something new going on politically that we have to just cry about. So
yeah.
Stay tuned for that.
This
That's
is where I air my grievances.
Right.
If you haven't yet, go listen to our last episode. It was a lot of rambling, but I read our tarot, and we went over our birth charts, I think.
Yes, we did. We wanted to have a cute little chatty kind of episode because it's been, you know, 8 years since we had recorded.
And I don't know why we literally both lost our jobs and like just like during COVID. But like you'd think that would give us more free time to do this, but we were just like, nope.
We can't function. Sorry. Yeah. I'll see you eventually.
And then the second we both get full-time jobs again, we're like, let's do a podcast again.
Right. And now we're like, we have regular jobs, bitch. We can have the weekends off.
Yeah.
Even though.
And I'm about to do Thanksgiving break because teachers get that.
Hot. I'm excited. My first like paid holiday off.
Ooh.
Like usually whenever I've had like paid holidays, I still have to work it, but I get extra pay.
Mm-hmm.
This, I just get 2 whole days off of work and I'm getting paid for it.
I love that for you.
And I'm like,
look at us. Who would have thought?
I know.
Not me.
It's fucking same. Well, on that note, enjoy your life. Thanksgiving will have already passed when this episode goes up. So
get ready for a holly jolly Christmas or Hanukkah or New Year.
Whatever you want to celebrate.
Or, an atheist Tuesday or
Christmas is on a Friday.
Oh, I just said a random day of the week and was like, let's hope I get it right.
Nope. Christmas is on a Friday, I think.
A or lovely maybe it's a atheist Saturday. Friday. I'm going to look it up. Wait.
I think it's Friday.
It is on a Friday. You were right.
Hot.
Hanukkah is also on a Friday.
Ooh, cute. Come on, things in 2020 being on Fridays, even though you can't do anything.
Gang, gang. Okay.
Well, that's been Kath.
That's been Chris.
And we're gonna go now.
Stay spooky, y'all.
Bye.